is 5 o'clock Central Time, and we're going to make sure that we're live. Let's check that out. And we're not live yet. Almost there. We're getting there. Come on now. Make us live. All right, let's see. Nothing yet. Nope, nothing yet. We'll get there. It says upcoming, but there we are. It took a little while, but we're there. And I'm all alone. Oh, we got a bunch of people already here. Great to see that. And yes, all right. And let us now take a look and see if Dave is around. He's not yet, but we're going to start. He'll get here when he gets here, right? So let's go here and begin the show, right? All right. Yes. The chat is working great. It is. All righty then. This is Dave Gahary, and you are watching, listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, show 15 here on FTJ. Before it was on Speak Free Radio, SFR. So we did over a year over there, I think. And then we came here. So we're in our 15th show, 15th week. Actually, more than that, because we skipped the Stupid Bowl. So, huh, interesting. Shameless Wise Ass says, working good here now. I had to refresh. Yeah, it didn't go live right away for some reason. I don't know why. But this is a Dave and Duke call-in show with me and Dr. David Duke, who will be with us shortly, hopefully. And the purpose of the show is it's a call-in show. You can call in from anywhere in the United States. The way that you do that, likewise, Jahan, if that's how you say it, right? All right. The way you do it is you go to FTJ Meeting, you click on that call-in tab, and that will bring up all the numbers from all over the world. And some of the countries have toll-free numbers. Not that it really matters anymore, because cell phones pretty much can call anywhere, and there's no charge. So what you will need, though, is you will need the PIN, and I will get you the PIN right now, and I'm going to pin the PIN in the chat, because the PIN changes every show, and so the numbers don't, and you just call those numbers, and then it will ask you to put in that 10-digit PIN, and I think followed by a pound sign. And then you could call in, and sometimes the numbers don't show up on the video. Sometimes they do. So if you care about your number, don't call. All right. BitChute. I didn't know we were on BitChute. Psycho Driller, Bushmaster, you're never alone, Big D. That is true. That is true. There is the pin. And like I said, I'm going to pin it to the top. So we've got it right up there. And that should appear at the top. And it does. Good. Okay. Excellent. And of course, it is March 23rd, 2025. Again, March. March just went. It just went. Just like January and February. It's crazy. It's the first quarter is almost gone. Yeah, so where you get the call-in numbers, you get them from FTJ Media. And you just go to the top, the menu bar, and you'll see that thing that says call in. And you click that, it opens up a new window, and then it gives you all of the numbers that you need. I guess almost all. It covers most of the countries in the world. United States, Argentina, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, Chile, China, Colombia, Costa Rica, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Denmark, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hong Kong, Hungary, India, Indonesia, Ireland, everybody's favorite, Israel, Italy, Japan, Kazakhstan, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Malaysia, Malta, Mexico, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Panama, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Portugal, Puerto Rico, Romania, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Slovakia, Slovenia, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Taiwan, Thailand, United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, and Vietnam. So that's how you get it. And there's the PIN number. And you can call in if you want. Hello, Klasha. Meaning videos that other channels put. Okay, I didn't know that. I don't watch these shows. I don't follow them either. So I don't know where they put them, but thank you for that. Red Pilled. Hello, George. Great to see you. Canada's up there. Yeah, yeah. Just click it and you'll see all the numbers. You can't miss it. I'm going to blow my nose. Okay. Let's, we might as well call Dave. I mean, he's only got a show, right? I mean, no big deal, right? Hello, Thomas. Great to see you. All right. And let's call Dave. What the hell? Let's call him and find out where he is. He might be sleeping. Let's see. Let's call him. Dave, where are you?
I tried to call you earlier. I'm sorry. I just was busy working. I wanted to talk to you earlier about possible directions of the show. Let me go get ready and I'll be right with you.
Yeah, yeah. The link is in Skype.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, buddy.
You should have called me back. I called you and left you a message.
I never got it. No. Phone never rang.
That's crazy. I did ring you.
You called this number? You called this number? Okay, bye. All righty then. There you heard it. Okay, I'm going to turn on the fan because it's warming up here in the panhandle. It's 72 degrees at least. All right. So here we are. And... all right. Let's see what we got here. Ah, you found the call button. Great. So it's not really a button. It's just, right, it's just a list of all the numbers for all the countries. And then if you call that, then of course you're gonna put in that PIN number that I pinned to the chat here. I'll read it out anyway for those of you not in the chat. Or those of you not looking at the chat, All right. The pin number is 3314, 3899, 46 hike. Kidding about the hike, but it's 3314, 3899, 46. And then you put the, or you hit the pound sign after that, I think. 3314, 3899, 46. There you go. So it's a call-in show. Anybody can call in. Anybody can ask any question, make a comment. The good doctor has 2 minutes to answer. And, of course, that 2 minutes is dependent upon a couple of things, as many of you know. And then I might have to pull out the buzzer, which I try to use sparingly. I hate this stuff. I just hate commercials. You know, just shut up. And it sounds like this. Oh, God. Commercials everywhere. There you go. So I'll buzz him if he's going on too long. I'll yell at him. There's no old guys here, Bushmaster. The ongoing challenge. Wait, Kalasha says it's a balmy 52 here. Wow. 52 is not here. Colorado, certain parts of Colorado have been getting some, you know, summertime weather. So that's pretty cool. We are too. The lizards are out in full force. Oh, they're eating all the bugs. Okay. So the ongoing challenge. This has been going on for a couple of years now. If anyone can let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, which is a lot of Jews, let us know and we'll quit the show right away. A bigger threat to humanity and free speech. And also, if you know a more effective deliverer of that message of Jewish supremacism, let us know. Other than Dr. David Duke, let us know and we'll quit. Of course, we're never going to be able to quit. Believe me, I know. That's a great one, Tom. Send Zyrtec. Yeah, there's a lot of pollen here. A lot of pollen and a lot of burning, too. They burn a lot here in the panhandle. They do that controlled burning. So let's also quickly take a look at what's going on FTJ before Dave joins us. All right. And I'm going to open it up. And there she blows. So we've got, of course, us now. And then upcoming, you can see on the homepage, you've got Psychodrilla, the full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show, episode 10, season 2. That's coming in 9 hours and 46 minutes, 20 seconds. Then episode 11, season 2. Then James and I on Tuesday at 11 o'clock Central Time, Siege of the Day, number 39. And then again, it says the full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show. The S or the X became a C somehow. That needs to change. All right, we got Dave. Let's bring him in. All righty then. You want to get cleaned up?
Yeah, I just compressed my hair a little bit for you guys. You want to look decent, here, y'all.
Jeez.
Gotta get some air.
Don't worry about shaving, Dave. You don't have to shave.
I'm not shaving.
No, I know. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I can get the lights on.
Right? Full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show, episode 13. 3 days, 9 hours away. And then Siege of the Day, number 40 on Thursday. And then Full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show, episode 14. It is 4 days and 9 hours away.
My lights disappeared.
So check all those shows. And then if you scroll down, you go, oh boy, look at that. Those darn Schaefer kids next month Monica and Alfred Schaefer. Many of us know who they are. They did their first show last week. It was great on Wednesday. So on this Wednesday, on April 9, which will be here before you know it, they've got their next show. And then you can scroll down. You can see all of the channels. You've got Giuseppe. You've got Flood. You got Nick Night Nation Review. You got Ballbusters. You've got Psychodrilla, Davis Lerman, Zach. You've got me and Dave and James. You've got Red Pilled Radio. You've got Bloodlines, Cultured Thug, War, Dr. Sean Brooks, Tonitris, David Duke. And on Duke, you know, we take the show from Rents and we put it here. So that's not a live show. But sometimes the Rents website is not functioning properly, and it doesn't allow you to take the show for some reason. I don't know why.
Sometimes it takes a little while for them to get the archive up.
No, even when the archive's up, I mean, it still doesn't work. Yeah.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, I know.
It's very seldom.
On our end, it happens a lot. It's an error.
We're just going to have to send you a copy of the show. Are you going to – we're going to have to just –
Well, Rents, it's Rents. It's on Rents.
Well, I know that. Yeah. If they send me a copy, they should send you a copy too.
Yep.
That way you have it.
Right.
Because it takes a while for the archive to get up.
Right. Then you got Kessler, Jason Kessler, and of course, Alfred Schaefer.
I don't know why it's so dark. Let's see what's going on.
Then you got Runigger, who hasn't done a show in a while, but he got out of trouble there in Australia. So, yeah, it is dark there, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know what's going
on
there. Let's see
what picks
it up.
Just flick on a light.
I got lights on. I can see.
Yeah.
See my lights. My lights are clear. Mm. I don't know why I'm not getting good.
No, it looks kind of dark.
Let me stay here now. It's still not really good. Let's see what we can do here. All right.
Well, you're doing that. I'm going to read the chats. I'd love to call in. I'm incredibly shy, though. Big fan of both of you. However, I think I have some new insight that you'd appreciate. I'll try to work up the nerve. There's nothing to be afraid of.
That's pretty good now, huh?
Let me take a look. Hold on. This auto scroll came on again.
Almost there.
Yeah, that's a little better. Yeah.
A little better.
Yeah.
Kind of disheveled today.
No, you're okay.
Got a big schedule going on.
You've looked worse.
Went out of town tomorrow for some car work.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But, yeah, there's a lot going on I wanted to discuss. I tried to reach you earlier, but we couldn't make connection.
My phone never rang, Dave.
I know. It's crazy.
I've been here all day.
Yeah, I know. That's just the way it works. So, anyway, I've got the
record. I watched some of that video you sent me.
Oh, yeah. The first part of it's interesting.
Very good.
The first part of it's really interesting about the Old Testament. And again, some Christians may be offended because a lot of Christians want to follow every word of the Old Testament. But people got to remember that the Old Testament has a lot of examples of Jews disobeying the law of God and God existing as judgment upon them. And the idea that a covenant would be based on their following the laws of God. And the Christian interpretation of that, for the entire history of Christianity, it was always really clear that Jews violated that covenant, crucified Christ, and opposed Christians. And the New Testament says pretty well, very clearly, Jesus Christ in his own words, and that's what I would go for, and people can say the words of the Old Testament. Remember, the covenant was always conditional. But if you really read the words of Jesus Christ in the Gospels, just read where he says, just as I led them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, they continued not in my covenant, and I consider them not, saying the Lord. In fact, the entire New Testament is simply a synonym for New Covenant. And the covenant was not based on the genealogy, but based on the promise, the blessings of God. That's what they were about. So that's kind of interesting. But there's lots of other things there too, because I think that Christ understood that the what's called the Old Testament or the Pentateuch or the Torah is something that underwent a lot of change. And from what it was in the origins, and by the way, it's hard to tell what the origins of it were, because the first actually development or the bringing the Old Testament together, which is supposed to be written by Moses and these other people, the first time there was ever a first really complete manuscripts of the Old Testament are not until about the middle of the second century BC. That's a long time since the time of Moses. And there had to be many times copies and many times oral copies. And the Maccabeans were a very radical group of Jews, the same kind of Pharisees that crucified Christ and that Christ railed against, in my opinion. They had the Hasmonean Empire, and they developed Judaism in the second century BC that mimics Judaism even to the present time, which is a Judaism of racial supremacism. It's a Judaism of hatred against all humanity, because Jews are only 1/5 of 1% of humanity, but they preach that all Gentiles are evil and that Jews have a right to rule over and even exploit Gentiles. Christ brought a new covenant, and the covenant was that basic premise of what Christ said was, if you want to know the summary of my law, or what I say, there's one great commandment. And he combined two commandments in one great commandment. And he said, the commandment is that you love God and you love thy brother as yourself. In other words, the golden rule, you treat others as you'd have them do unto you. And the New Testament, in place after place after place, New Testament, says that they quote the Jews, and it says that specifically, that they continued not in the covenant, and the kingdom of God was taken away from them and deserving and given to the nations, such as the Gentiles, the Romans and the Greeks, which were the carriers of Christianity. And those are the people who now had the task of carrying the word of God to the earth, which is kind of interesting. By the way, I was thinking about this, and I definitely believe in the idea of the golden rule. And I think all of us really do in our hearts. And that is, treat others the way that you would want to be treated. Now, that doesn't mean that you can allow other people to rape your children or put you into slavery or invade your country or promote pornography or whatever. Commit pedestry against your kids. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that you give people a chance and you give them an opportunity, and you're peacemakers rather than warmongers. You don't have a right to exploit other people, to cheat other people. And the Old Testament basically backs up that right. The Old Testament says, for instance, that usury, which is exorbitant interest, it's the same thing as loan sharking, actually. I don't know what that spot is here, but usury is something that is damaging to people. It hurts people. It's harmful to people. That's what it says in the Old Testament, numerous places. And in fact, you cannot practice usury against a fellow Jew, but you can do it against a non-Jew. You can do it against a Roman. You can do it against a Greek. You can do it against a Hittite. You can do it against a Samaritan. You can do it against anybody else, but not against Jews. And the same thing is true about slavery. It says you can enslave non-Jews, and that was really an ethnic issue, not just a religious one. Because as the Bible shows many, many times, there's many times when the Jews were very much attacking of God and the laws of God and disobeying God. Just remember what happened after the time when he came down from the mountain and he came back to them worshiping the idols. And there's many times when God was punishing Jews as a group. In fact, that is said many, many times in the Old Testament. But Jesus said that the same laws have to apply for everyone. So I just figured out, I'd like to make a synonym or apply this idea that you do unto everyone, every person individually, as you'd have them do unto you, as you'd have them treat you. That's a golden rule. So I'll say, when I believe in terms of a group ethic, and I do believe that the basic principle is that not only do you treat individuals as you'd want to be treated, depending on their actions, of course, to you later, but you also treat other peoples the way you want your own people to be treated. And that's something that I learned in my life, and I kind of got clear about my life when I became a person that was realizing the very existence and the life, the sustenance of our own people was being threatened by this massive migration and by the things that the Jews were doing to undermine our culture, our values, our faith, every tradition and value of Western civilization. When I came to understand these things, I kind of realized something. If I want my people to be free, and I want Europeans to have the right to life and existence and preservation and freedom and all that, then obviously other peoples around the world who are not bothering me, who are not trying to take me over or hurt me, we should treat them fairly. So that's a pretty good, you know, so I'll just, I think it's the gospel of Christ, because it would seem to apply that not only do I believe that we should treat individuals as we want to be treated, and the golden rule of being fair and kind to everyone, at least initially, give them a chance and treat them right. And then you can judge people by what they do and what you need to do to protect the your own people and protect yourself, which you have a right to do. It's a basic law. Self-preservation is a right instilled by God, I believe, in nature. Even nature says that every animal, every living form wants to preserve itself. And you have groups doing the same thing. I mean, you have different tribes of ants, which you might say subspecies of ants, races of ants, who are invaded by other ant colonies. And they instinctually, you know, will try to preserve their people from being, even ants can even enslave other ants, believe it or not. And other animals can enslave other animals, like aphids. But people naturally have this urge to self-preservation as individuals and as groups. So I would say, I believe not only the golden rule for individuals, which I think I try to treat everybody fairly. And if someone, you know, tries to hurt me or my kids, I certainly am going to oppose them and try to save justice. But also, I believe that to treat other peoples and races just as I'd want to be treated. And that's a way, I think that's a way to peace and a way to justice in the world.
Good segue to the call that's coming in, Dave.
Okay, well, good. Let's go for it.
All right. All right, caller. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi.
Fine.
What's your,
I'm
what's
very
your first
nervous.
Name?
You know, my first name is Johan.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Canada.
Sorry to hear that. And
I know it's cold.
Besides
call
that,
the other day and leave a message.
Yeah.
Program.
Yeah. So
I'm very nervous.
There's nothing to be nervous about.
Did you call me the other day and ask me about leaving a message that you wanted to do a program with me or something that you're involved in activities in Canada? Did you talk to me the other day? Or talk to one?
No, not that wasn't me.
Just wondering.
I did email you a few times because I had an order for the book.
So many thousands
on your website.
Emails. I mean, we get the emails from.
Yeah, the website doesn't work. His website doesn't work.
The email doesn't work very well. But even my personal email is like.
But you got him now, so go ahead, John.
You got me.
I know. I was so excited. I was really excited to get the books, and then my credit card was acting a little funny. And then I tried a different credit card, and it still didn't work. And then I had.
You can tell me what you need. Yeah. I don't have. I only have the Jewish supremacist.
You can get it from us. We'll tell you how to do that after you ask your question.
He's doing a thing where he's donating money to my cancer treatment.
Well, I was worried that maybe customs would have taken my books anyway, so that concern in the back of my mind.
No, that doesn't happen.
They sent them under plain cover. We're just. An address that's not on any call list, so I think you can get them. If you don't get them, we'll replace them.
Yeah, we deliver to Canada all the time, daily. all different books, and we've never had any issues.
It's a little more expensive to Canada because it's
the I can only get the Jewish Supremacy book. Is that correct? This website?
Yeah, from Money Tree Publishing. Yep. Right.
Okay, so I called. I was planning on writing an email just because I feel like I'm not the most articulate person, and I'm very nervous, so I don't want to kind of make a mistake in how I'm presenting the information.
Sure.
I'll give you a little background about me. I am Lebanese by race. Mm-hmm. I'm a Muslim. However, I don't subscribe to much of what the majority of Muslims believe in, because unfortunately they've taken something called the Hadith as on par with the Word of God. And if you look back at what those are, they have basically been, they're basically Talmudic in nature. And they have said that, you know, Prophet Muhammad slept with a 9-year-old and he was a warlord, and they say all these really blasphemous things, not just about him, but about God and many of the other prophets, whereas the Quran warns about taking that side, that sort of discord, right? Especially when you look at the history and when it was written. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe that the Jews have basically bamboozled millions and millions of Muslims to believe all these basically fairy tales. So what I was coming on here to discuss,
yeah,
was, I'm sure that you guys are both, especially David Duke, I know you quote the Bible quite a bit, and not to say that I'm super familiar with the Bible, but I do look at it and I try to read it. Mm-hmm. I mostly focus on the words of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he says, I come to the lost children of the sheep of Israel. And then at one point he tells them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and you will do your father's desires. He also says, they answered him, this is John 8:39. Abraham is our father. Jesus said to them, if you were...
Yeah.
If you were of Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. And so he's basically calling them out and saying that it pains them to know that they are not from the seed of Abraham. So when I read the Quran, I kept wondering why Jacob, right, in the Bible, and what millions of people believe around the world, mm-hmm. billions actually, right, how they say that he wrestled the devil and then his name got changed to Israel. And then from then on, that's where we get the tribes of Israel. And I mean no disrespect to anybody's faith or anything of the sort. I'm just basically expressing my perception. And I'm very nervous. Sorry, my voice is a little shaky.
Well, we can try to discuss this a little bit if you want me to give you a take on your comments.
I don't think she's done yet, Dave.
I know. I'm giving her a chance to finish.
Sorry. So I, in my perception, so I believe that, because when I look at the Quran and I believe that that's the word of God, he's mentioned the children of Israel many times in the scripture, but there's a few places where he mentions Israel by name, the person. And at one point he says, everything was lawful for the children of Israel except for what Israel forbade for himself before the Torah came down. And then there's another verse where it talks about how there were two brothers, right? There were two sons, the sons of Adam, and they both gave an offering to God. One was accepted and one wasn't. And then so the one son, when his offering wasn't accepted, he reached out to kill his brother, and his brother said, if you reach out to me, I won't do the same, basically, and you'll basically inherit my sins, right, if you kill me. And then a few verses after that in the Quran, it says, and that's why we remind the children of Israel that if you kill one, it's like killing all of humanity. And if you save a life, it's like saving all of humanity. And then the light bulb clicked in my head, and I realized, because in the Quran, it doesn't say Cain and Abel. It doesn't. It just talks about the two brothers. And so what I realized was God is talking about Cain, Cain being Israel, right? And that's the whole line of basically that race, because that's something that they keep a secret. They don't want anybody to know that they're an ethno-religion.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to say that they're just a religion, or sorry, they're just a religion of, you know, Judaism, and they like to keep certain things a secret so not to expose their identity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because there's other verses where it talks about Noah being on the boat, right, and some of his descendants, and then it also talks about how there's descendants of Abraham on the boat, and there's descendants of Israel. So it kind of all kind of clicks together, because I realized that they are actually from the descendants of Cain,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want anybody to know that. And so what they've done, because when I look at the verses in the Quran where it talks about the children of Israel, it's always in regards to Moses. But what they've done is, I believe personally that they've managed to change a bit of the scripture and to think, making it out that they're part of the seed of Abraham, where Jesus actually calls them out and says, you're not of the seed of Abraham, and it pains you to know that you're from your father, the devil. And he also says, he was a murderer from the very beginning. So Jesus actually knew that, and he was calling him out for it.
That's what Jesus said to him. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so Jesus knew that he was there from the line of Cain. I have more information, but I think like that kind of sums it up as best as
I can. I love to comment on your question, and we obviously let you go a long time. And
wait, hold on, Dave. What was the question?
Oh, it's not a question. It's a discussion.
I don't know. Do you have a question?
Hold on,
Dave. Hold on a second. What, do you have a question here?
For a second, okay?
Just hold on one second.
I just want to respond to her.
I know, but let me just see if she has a question.
Listen, I'm asking this. I'm trying to make that point. If you just let me for a minute, I can talk to her. You know, it's possible. I'm in the room. I'm here. I'm David Duke. You don't have to tell me what her question is.
I don't know what her question is.
I'm going to ask her specifically what her question is if you just give me a chance to deal with it.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Ma'am, listen.
Yeah.
I'm getting a sense of your questions, and certainly I wanted you to express yourself fully, and I'd like to answer some of these questions that you're raising about, you're asking different aspects of who's Cain and who's not and this type of thing. And I'm going to tell you what I think about that and how I think we should answer those questions, if you'd like me to.
Sure. I didn't actually have a question necessarily. I just
you were raising your opinion.
Wanted to hear your insight.
Give you my opinion. If I think that's what you were trying to do, to say, what is your opinion on these things? And here's my opinion. I think, you know, you got to be able to see the forest, not just the trees. There's an old saying, just don't get caught up in the weeds. You know, try to get the main things. And here's what you got to remember when you look at the Bible and the scriptures. Scriptures have been copied many, many times by many, many people. And people often say that there's no contradictions in the Bible, but any Bible scholar, including Christians who are very dedicated Christians, will tell you, yes, there are some errors, but you also have to look at the spirit of the law. And then you have to make a decision. And that's when you go directly to Jesus and God and try to get these questions answered. And you get those questions answered with the mentality inside of us. Now, Jesus said in Luke 17, very, very clearly, he said, you want to know where God is? And Jesus said, God is inside you. In effect, that God is in your highest instincts. God is in your highest morality. God is actually within you and outside of you. And so you have to actually, I think people have a natural sense of what's just or what's right and what's not. Now, the problem that we have with a lot of this textual stuff, a lot of people take the Old Testament literally, and they take, for instance, the story of Noah's Ark literally. If someone wants to believe in Noah's Ark, I don't have any problem with them. If they're a Christian, obviously, I'm a Christian, and I would tell my fellow Christians who might believe in Noah's Ark, please pay attention mostly to Christ's lessons and the teachings of Jesus Christ. And he gave us what we need to do to be saved. He gave us what we need to do to obey the laws of God. And he said, there's one great commandment, that you love God and that you do what? You treat your neighbor like yourself. You treat everybody fairly and decently. And
absolutely.
And that's what Christ says. Now, I have some issue with, you know, I don't particularly believe that in Noah's Ark. And some Christians will be upset with me. Most Christians, I think, believe that that's a story, maybe an illustration that's written by writers in a long, long time ago. But it's hard to know what is myth, what's a story written and created centuries later, in fact. And the fact is that we have very little evidence of the Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible, in terms of its actual context, in terms of its actual contents, I should say, as well as context. We don't even really have any sense of that until about the second or third century BC. Yet it's writing about things that supposedly were written by Moses and other scholars back right now from today's date, 3,800, 3,900 years ago. And yet we don't have any copies of any of the scriptures, even though probably over those 1,800 years, a lot of copies were made. And that's people hand copying it, thousands of different people. And I believe, just like people today, no matter how much they believe in God or Christ, they can make mistakes when they copy. And they can make mistakes, errors, and they can also be sitting there all day long, every day of their life, and they might think, well, I'm inspired by God to write something, a particular idea. This is a good story that can illustrate this principle, and they'll write it. So when I look at Noah's Ark, I look at this, and then I look at Jesus Christ, what Jesus Christ said. And Jesus Christ basically said that I come not to destroy you. I come not to punish you. I come to forgive you. I come to give you a new life, not only an eternal life for everyone, no matter what race, heritage, tradition, value you are. I come to save you. I come for a better life for you, for your children, and an eternal life as well. That's pretty doggone wonderful, right? The idea, for instance, that all of humanity, except for Noah's family, that all of humanity would be drowned, would die. We're talking about, theoretically, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of children, babies, mothers watching their babies drown, watching your parents drown. The loving God that I believe in, that I believe with my heart, is the God that I want to worship, a God of love and forgiveness and kindness, I don't think would do that. But that's what they're suggesting. Furthermore, the entire story of Noah's Ark.
Do you believe in God's punishment then? Like if a society or you know, in this case, the world is gone so astray. And
here's what I don't believe. You're right. And I think that Jesus talks the same way. I don't believe in collective punishment. Look, let me give you an example. Jesus Christ spoke out very firmly against the harming of children. And what did he say about children? Now, by the way, the New Testament.
Who harm a child, they'd be better off with a millstone around their neck.
Exactly. But what else did he say? That and this is really important, right? So he said that children, all children. And when he talked about human beings, he talked about everyone. Everyone can have salvation. There's no more chosen ones. The chosen ones now are those that accept
live
God,
righteously,
follow God, and follow the way of the golden rule. Treat other people fairly. There's good examples of that. For instance, he really dresses down the Jews in the Good Samaritan story. Are you familiar with the Good Samaritan story? Here we have a guy that gets robbed on the road, a very dangerous road, I think, between Jerusalem and another city. And he's robbed, he's hurt, he's beaten, he's stripped of his clothing and everything else. And a Jewish priests, I mean, the elite, the Jews, come by. And he goes and he gets to the other side of the road. He doesn't help the man, his fellow Judean. All right. And then it comes a Levite. Now, the Levite are the priest class of Judaism. And guess what? He avoids the person, too. The next person that comes along is a Samaritan. Now, according to the Jewish law, Samaritans are the epitome of evil. They're your enemies. That you are taught in the Old Testament to really despise Samaritans. You don't associate with them. You don't drink after them, even though a lot of them accepted certain biblical laws and Torah laws. And they said they loved God. But you didn't drink after them. You didn't associate with them. There's a famous story of Jesus at the well with a Samaritan woman, and he asked her for water, which was a big no-no. And so Jesus does the Samaritan parable, and he says the Samaritan, unlike the Levite, unlike the Jewish high priest, right, he stops. And even though he's not a Jew, he helps this Jew who was a victim of robbery on the road. He goes the extra mile. He binds his wounds. He lets him ride on his donkey. He goes to an inn. He pays very high amount of money, many denarii, in terms of the stay for the person. And he goes to the owner of the inn and he says, I'm coming back through here. And whatever other expenses, please nurse him back to health. Whatever other expenses he has, I will cover. Right? Now, the interesting thing was, and this is another good example. Remember how I said earlier that love thy neighbor as thyself. Here's the issue, and here's what Jesus was talking about when he talked about the story. People often think it's about how you're supposed to be kind to someone on the road, right? And also how Samaritans, their enemies of the Jews, are praised. And it's showing how that people do not have to be Jewish to be good or to be non-Jewish to be bad. But here's the situation. In this story, it's fascinating because he's talking about the story, and there's a Jewish lawyer. Now, when I say lawyer, the meaning of lawyer at that time, according to Jewish law, that's the person that explained the Torah script to the masses, you know, to the followers. He is the guy that was the explainer. And he was like setting a trap for Jesus when he asked about it, when Jesus said this. And he says to Jesus, he says, and who is thy neighbor? And you know how Jesus answered him? It was one of the most powerful and beautiful things in the New Testament. He said, here's how I answer you. The good neighbor, the neighbor, was the person that ministered to this needy human being who was suffering, that took care of him, a victim of robbery on the road, who provided for him, who made sacrifices for him, even for his very enemies, because he had a sense of humanity and justice. That's who the neighbor is. The Samaritan proved that he was a true neighbor to everyone. The Jews that passed by didn't believe that non-Jews were truly neighbors. And that's true, and that's explained as well in many places in the Old Testament, as well as the Talmud, which says that the neighbor is your fellow countryman. That's why, even though Jews killed a lot of other peoples, Samaritans, Hittites, I mean, Moabites, we can just keep going on, Canaanites, all these people, they murdered, in fact, even children, many other thousands. That wasn't, how is that not a prohibition of the rules of Moses, the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. When they came into Canaan, did they not steal other people's lands and property and businesses? Did they not steal their homes? Does it say that you can enslave other people other than yourself? But you're not supposed to enslave Jews. But the interesting thing is, too, to show you the corruption that existed in Judaism, which didn't have the love of Jesus ever presided to them effectively, because they rejected Jesus. He tried to correct them, right? So Judaism.
Well, they placed their rabbis and and such as Lourdes, right? And yeah. I completely agree with you. They nowhere does Moses differentiate between Jews and Gentiles.
Well, that's Judaism was a religion of supremacy. Now, some people can think that God intended there to be. However, there are some passages in the Old Testament that seem to suggest they're supposed to be fair to everyone. There are passages like that, but there's a lot more passages saying you can commit usury against a non-Jew. Fine, that's great, even though usury is a horrible thing of biting and addiction, and which it is. It's like loan sharking. You can enslave other people. But you know what else? You know, Jews were forbidden from enslaving their own. Then other places in the Old Testament, it literally provides that a Jew can sell his own little baby girl into sexual slavery to other people. He can sell his own little girl into sexual slavery. And it's just kind of amazing. There's a lot of things in the Old Testament that makes you think and makes you feel like, oh my God, is this real? When you read about, for instance, when you read about the Moabites and 35,000, you know, virgins being given to the soldiers for spoils of war to rape and molest and so forth. When you read about other passages saying you should kill all the men and the young boys, you know, but you can ravage the wives of your enemies. You can ravage those innocent wives, right? And you can ravage these little girls, young girls, right? You've never known man by lying with them. And you can take them as your booty. You know, I believe that you have two choices to make here. You can say that Christ, if Christ is God, and Christ said, when you look at my face, you're looking at God, you can believe that this is not a good representation of God. Who is ever writing these passages is not expressing the true will of God. Or you can believe that these were people who were trying to affect the scriptures for their own political advantage or racial advantage or ethnic supremacy or whatever. You've got two basic choices. Now, you can argue that we can't understand God, but also, by the way, if you read the Old Testament, it's not just even about non-Jews. I'll give you an example. When God would say that the laws of the Torah were broken, when he said this, that you would be punished and your children would be punished for 3-4 generations. Generations of children would be born to suffer because of what you did with the transgression of the law. Now, when I came up believing and praying to God and loving Jesus Christ and his teachings of love, and I came to believe that God was truly like our Father, that God protected the innocent. He loved the innocent. That God would never knowingly hurt a child or cause a child to be raped or murdered. As you said, if you cause in the New Testament, Christ said, if you would even cause this little, she pointed out a little child. He said, if you'd even cause this child to stumble in the slightest harm, you deserve to go to the bottom of the sea. Or as he said, it's better to go to the bottom of the sea. And when he said that, he didn't mean that, that he wanted to torture you forever. To have this terrible torture. No, he was basically saying that you're better off to go to the bottom of the sea because you deserve to be stoned, and that's a lot more torturous and tortured or crucified or whatever they did, right, at the time. You're better off to do that because that's the wrath you're going to get from loyal people who don't want their daughters to be raped or murdered or abused or harmed. Christ said, fought love. And that's really what he did teach. And he taught to try to seek the real love. Now, here's the fact. We know history. I can show you Jewish scholars like Adler, Jonathan Adler, who is on the Jewish Archaeological Board. And we can look at the history of Judaism. And we know that up until around the 3rd century before Christ, Jews didn't follow any of the alleged ritual of the Pentateuch, of what's called the Torah, the law. How do we know that? We know that because we could go to the Jewish houses and the homes in the Jewish areas, and we could find lots of pig bones, even though pigs were, You can get stoned for eating pig meat, right? You could be stoned for eating catfish or shellfish rather than fish with scales, right? I mean, this is real. And there are people punished this way. You could be stoned for violating the Sabbath. Remember the story about the adulteress who was going to be stoned. And Jesus said, go and sin no more. Are you repentful? Yes. You know, you could be stoned, right? So it's like this was the teachings of Jesus Christ. Now, what happened was Jews were never the big giant kingdom they say they were. And the fact is, there's a lot of evidence they were never even in Egypt in great numbers. The idea that they wandered the desert for 30 years or 40 years, excuse me, with 3 million people, because they said there were 900,000 soldiers and you got the wives and children and so forth. That's at least 3.5 million people, more than likely. They couldn't have survived for 40 years. And it doesn't make any sense, you know, at all. And they were supposedly escaping from Egypt to Canaan. But you look at the time frame, and it's easy to determine this. And by the way, there's no record of any of this historiography, even though the Egyptians were pretty good historians. You look at the time frame, Egypt controlled what was Canaan at that time. So the Jews were escaping Egypt, going to Egypt controlled Canaan after they caused the death of all the Tsar's men and one of the biggest defeats that Egypt ever had. And by the way, Egypt recorded in their histories even the slightest defeats they had. And also, if you look at the story of, you know, of the cedar dinner, you know, if you look at the story of the blood of the lamb on the doors and so forth, striking down the firstborn of the Egyptian enemy. And before that, they did plagues, having locusts bite everybody, thousands of locusts, thousands of, to run the Nile, you know, red with blood. And yet, but it even says things in there, like it says in there, that God hardened the heart of the Pharaoh. Hardened the heart of the Pharaoh. So why would God harden the heart of the Pharaoh? And instead of saying, opening the heart of the Pharaoh and let the children go with no violence, not against Egyptians or against Jews. You see what I'm saying? These are things.
I believe that God hardens the heart of those who themselves have diseases in their heart, right? So if you're.
No, he doesn't. No, he does. I don't think he does harden the heart. I think God comes to open the heart. Jesus came to open the heart to say, you know, you have the ability to be forgiven. That's a beautiful thing. It's a positive thing. You have a right to restart.
Absolutely. God is most forgiving and most compassionate, but there are exactly. Those people that do like the Jews, right? Continuously push away God's guidance commit atrocities all around the world.
They do.
And so they are cursed for their disbelief, right? And so that to me means that misguides them.
But Jesus was sent not to make God, you know, make the Jews more deceitful and more liars and more cheaters and more destroyers and more hateful against even their own people in the world and teaching these false principles. He came to change their hearts. He came to open their hearts, didn't he? I mean, this is
absolutely a warning. He sent many warnings to them. And that's why I believe that they were considered or not chosen. They were favored by God in the sense that he gave them so many chances and so many scriptures and prophets were sent to them. And, you know, he saved them from Pharaoh, if you believe that story.
I don't believe the story because I believe, and here's what I know, that the Torah, I'll give you an example. There was a Jewish colony. We're getting to a long discussion here, but it's so interesting.
I can go too if other people want to call. So.
Well, that's okay, but let's finish this as quickly as I can. But so there was a Jewish colony. Now the Persians came in and conquered Judea and conquered Israel. In fact, they were conquered repeatedly. I mean, the Babylonians conquered. And God said he was going to punish them by that because they were so ungodly, right? And so evil in terms of the teachings that he was trying to give them. But they actually went in Persia at one time, and the Persian Empire expanded. They were able to colonize this island in the Nile. It's one of the head islands of the Nile that flows up, you know, to the mouth of the Nile. And this was in the 4th, 5th century before Christ. And they built a temple there. Now, you're only supposed, according to the Torah law, have one temple, and that's in Jerusalem. So, but they built a temple in this island called Elephantine, this colony. And they wrote back and forth with many letters, which we have preserved. It's a very dry climate there. We've got letters being preserved both from the temple in Jerusalem to them and back and forth. And there's never any mention of Torah. There is mention of the fact that they had, other gods in their coins, that they had a lot of polytheism. All of these things were there, that they had pig meat, and it just rule after rule, which are critical, which became pivotal in Judaism. And the one reason why they wanted this ritual was because they wanted something that would divide and isolate Jews from others, because they didn't want Jews to assimilate with others, because Jews were viewed, right, as the superior people of the world, that they had a right to rule the world. It says that in Deuteronomy. I don't think that God ever intended for me, who has Anglo-Saxon descent and German descent and Nordic descent and some Italian descent or whatever, I don't believe that God ever believed that. I think that all humanity, the truth that when Jesus said, I didn't come to change the law, I came to fulfill it. And he said the fulfillment of the law is love. So when you get all these questions about Cain and Abel and all these interpretations, for me, it's the spirit that Christ taught. And I can be consistent with this spirit. Jews still, to this day, they didn't have the teachings of Jesus. See, they wanted a Messiah to come and conquer and to kill those Gentiles. By the way, those people they were supposed to kill were us. Rome is part of our Western civilization. They were the same people as we are today, whether in Canada or Europe or whatever, and many of the people in the Middle East, there's lots of Roman blood in us. Greeks certainly had great values and great principles, and Europeans were great people, and they had families just like every other people around the world. They had justice around the world, but Jesus brought a certain message. Jews didn't want that message. They wanted a message of racial supremacy. So what happened was, after the Maccabeans rose up, these radical Jews, kind of like ISIS of today, that's what they were. So they massacred all the Jews in Jerusalem who were marrying Greeks and Syrians, right? Who were getting the learning of Greek philosophy, mathematics, architecture, art, all these things. Jews weren't even supposed to do art because that's supposed to be against the Torah. But they started adopting all these things. And the way that Jonathan Adler of Jewish archaeology shows that the Torah wasn't even a word used by Jews. They had maybe some scraps of some writings, but the Torah wasn't even used. And this didn't come into effect till about the first or second century. All right, and then into the new millennium. Now, what happened by that time was synagogues were formed. Jews separated themselves from other people. They really enforced the law of endogamy, that if Jews married out, there was Jews, especially in these other communities where there are very small percentages of the population, in places in Asia Minor and in Rome and in Greece and the islands of Greece and wherever, Spain, Europe, whatever, that when they outmarried, they were rejected from the Jewish gene pool. So Jews became very, very, very inbred. And it actually separated them genetically a great deal from their relatives in the Middle East, which were probably Palestinians, had some similar genetic background. But we know, anyone can do a test, the 24andMe or whatever it be, ancestry.com, and you can find out the Jewish part of your ancestry, or whether you have these Jewish markers would qualify someone to make Aliyah and go to Israel. And we know that Jews are the most genetically related people in the world. And that's not just Jews that, were born in the Middle East. That's Jews that were Ashkenazi Jews in Eastern Europe who married a little bit in the early days with some Gentiles. And that's why they have a little lighter skin than the Sephardic Jews, who had darker skin, look more like Italians and Spaniards, and the Jews of the Masri, which were much more like Mediterranean Jews. But they have this endogamous thing where Jews mixed among themselves only, and over the centuries, they really became more and more alike. They became less diverse. Science says today that Jews are like fifth cousins to one another. So not only was their principles very racist, you didn't drink after a Jew, you didn't eat with a Jew, you didn't go to a non-Jewish home, you were taught that non-Jews were unclean creatures, you are also misogynistic to a point that women, it was very, very anti-woman. The truth is, the original Greeks and the original Europeans, they loved women. They felt that their fertility process, they had many women gods. And interestingly enough, early in the Old Testament, it seems that Yahweh had a wife, Assyria. Believe it or not, and Elohim is another god. So even the monotheism that we claim from the Old Testament was showing that even in Genesis, they're talking about Elohim, and they're talking about Yesha. They were different gods, and Elohim were a pantheon of gods. Even the Ten Commandments say, you shall have no other gods before thee. And they were talking about gods. They weren't talking about the way somebody referred to a god today of money or whatever. They were talking about gods. Now, that all changed. But when they were developing the way they thought the religion had to be to demand unity and to keep the Jews in control and also have unity against the Gentile world, they developed this hyper-racism. This comes from the Hasmonean so-called dynasty, which really wasn't much of a dynasty. It lasted about 75 years, 100 years. That's not much of a dynasty. The Egyptians had dynasties that lasted 1,500, 2,000 years or more. But the Jews had this kingdom, and they preached absolute supremacy. The Old Testament says, you will be above all other nations, right? Now, it does say, again, quote, that if this is only if you obey all my laws. And so the Christian church went and defined this as the Jews broke the law by opposing Christ, by rejecting Christ, by literally leading to the crucifixion of Christ. Well, by the way, the Romans didn't really want to crucify Christ. And the Romans and the Greeks, the Gentiles, accepted Jesus Christ, and they became the chosen one. As it says, you are removed from the kingdom of God. This is what Jesus says. And it's given to a nations that will produce the fruits of it. Nations, not Jews. Because Jews as a group had rejected. Now, again, unlike the Jewish religion, which does everything in a sense of a guilt by association. Well, what's the right word for it? You know, it's like indiscriminate mass. You massively murder. You have the idea that if people are bad, you're going to kill all the people, men, women, children, and so forth. Jesus didn't say that. He said, Jesus didn't say that. I'm on the air right now, doctor, but let me call you back right after my lecture here, if you don't mind. Take care. So Jesus said that a Jew is, permitted to also have salvation, but that's not the way the Jews worked. Theoretically, you could, but it's kind of hard for somebody as a grown adult male to be circumcised by some Jewish rabbi who's going to cut off part of his reproductive
organ. I wonder if he'll still suck the blood off the penis when he's done as an adult male. Or if they only do it with children.
That's what they did to everyone then. That's what circumcised. That's what the Mohill did. I mean, I don't think there's many people. That's a pretty good. This was circumcision was a barrier to assimilation. See, they're around Gentiles, and some Gentiles they might have been doing some business with, right? Are loaning money to them or doing whatever they're doing to them. And they're doing business with them.
But guess what? You know, and some of them, these Gentiles weren't very wealthy, and they say, man, I want to be like you. I want to join you. Look how you got money. You got all this stuff. You can practice usury. I can't practice usury as a Christian or something. And then the Jewish rabbi would say, oh, great. You can join us. Of course, we're going to have to cut off part of your body in the most sensitive, painful places possible. You could get an infection. You could die from it. We don't have any antibiotics. You know, we don't even know what all that is all about, right? And you have a chance of dying. You have a chance of losing your reproductive organs. And you're going to be down for a few weeks, actually, as a grown man with that kind of circumference, you know, of your older age. I mean, that is a great way to say, okay, you're welcome to join. You're welcome to become a Jew, but this is what you got to do. And plus, you've got to be filleted. I'll just use that term. I don't think most kids can understand what that means anyway. You got to be filleted by our Jewish rabbi who's going to do this to you afterward. I mean, that is a barrier. And there's many other barriers as well as that. But
or they let the Gentiles join their Masonic clubs and, you know,
they did to an extent. They did that to control them, right? And exactly, and sometimes they would actually, have women marry Gentiles, Jewish women, because they didn't look much at women anyway very well. I mean, the average Jewish male still makes this prayer in the world. Who is an Orthodox Jew? Orthodox Jew, Jewish males say this prayer every morning when they get up. And this is a real truth. I even AI'd this, and I got AI to finally admit this by going to the major people. And the prayer goes like this. Lord God, thank you for not making me a goy, one of those filthy Gentiles, you know, not making me a goy. Not making me a woman. That's just as bad, just about, not quite, or making me a slave. I mean, it was more a forbidden thing to marry a goy or a woman to you can't make it up, folks. To be a woman. It was worse to be a goy or a woman than it was to be a slave. And of course, they think that we are destined for slavery. That's what Noahide laws are, that we have to follow these Jewish rules. So those are just some of the concepts. So all I say to you is you can pray about these things, think about these things. You know, spend your time reading the New Testament. Spend your time reading the teachings of Christ and the apostles. And just try to get a sense. And every single word, if it says in there, you know, go to the Jews first and the Gentiles. Well, you have to understand, one thing I know about Jesus Christ and some of the apostles is that they were trying to be very diplomatic. They were in a Jewish community, and they were teaching at first mainly among Jews, but they were offering their teachings to Gentiles, such as the centurion, right? He wanted Jesus to save his slave, heal his slave. Now, the centurion was a non-Jew. That's supposed to be the enemies. In fact, Jesus, when the centurion came to one of his healings, the centurion said that Jesus said, I've seen you heal. I've seen your power. He said, look, I've got a sick servant. Actually, it was his son who he fathered from a servant. And I want you to heal my servant. And you don't have to come to my house. I know it's dangerous. It'd be dangerous for you to come to your house. My house, because you're not allowed to do that. And with the things you teach, the Jewish establishment doesn't like you. So please just don't come to my house. I have so much faith in you that I believe that you can heal my son, heal my servant without even coming into my house. You can heal from any place. Same way I could command one of my troops, who's an officer in the Roman Guard. And there's many other things like that in there. We talked about the serpent. We talked about I've talked about before, the lesson of the vineyard. Last thing I want to say before we get off this topic, and I do want to talk about another subject eventually in today's program that's very pertinent to what's going on today, some new revelations about 9/11 from this is from the Redacted show today, one of the former members of the Armed Services Committee, a Republican served 20 years, talking about the cover-up of the 9/11 attack. But anyway, so
I won't take much of your time because I know that I have kind of taken the whole show so far.
But that's fine. But let me give you the vineyard story, and that's enough mm-hmm. all we need. So the vineyard story is one of the most poignant parables that Christ did. And it's a parable, like most parables, they don't have to try to explain it, but you can figure it out. And this is one of the parables where they actually explained it in the end. So the parable was of a man who owned a vineyard. And the vineyard is a beautiful vineyard, well kept. It's got a winery in it. It's got a pit where they press the grapes with the feet, you know, beautiful fields, beautiful grapes, beautiful whatever. And people came to them and wanted to rent the vineyard and use it to grow grapes and make a wine business. And the owner said, fine, I'll let you rent it. I'll give you a good price, but you've got to pay the rent. Your obligation is to keep the vineyard nice and to pay the rent, you know, and yes, you can use it. So he turned over the vineyard to them. So after a while, the man wasn't sending any payment for the vineyard. And so the man said, well, I will send two servants to the people of the vineyard, and I will say, please pay the rent. You've got this great vineyard, and please pay the rent. So guess what? The people who ran the vineyard now, they killed the two servants. This is pretty bad, right? And then now the vineyard owner was a big shot, and he was pretty famous in the area, and he had a son, and he said, and his son's pretty strapping, pretty cool guy, and he sent the son, and he said, certainly they wouldn't harm my son if I sent him to collect the rent. And that was what was due for what they were getting, the benefit of this magnificent vineyard. So guess what they did? They killed his only son. Now, the New Testament says it real clearly. This is a story of the Jews. The Jews were allowed to be the tenants of the establishment of what was called the Jewish religion or the Judaic religion, but they violated it. God sent his only son to say, these are the requirements, these are your responsibilities, and you need to be kind, generous, you need to be mindful of the rights of everyone, and including Jews. And by the way, one last illustration of that point is that, as I said earlier, the Old Testament says you can't practice usury on your fellow Jews. Well, when Jesus went to the temple, and this is a few days before he was crucified by these people, he goes to the temple, and the money changers, which is nothing more than a synonym for the term money changers, money lenders, usurers. He goes there and he sees these money lenders. Most of the people that are living in the Jewish temple, they're doing in the Jewish temple, are lending to fellow Jews, which is against the law. And Jesus, you know, goes in there and he overturns the tables. He whips them. Only time Jesus got violent, by the way. He wouldn't even, much less sort of human being, an adult, but as a child, right? And he gets by, he turns over the tables. You can imagine this scene. I'm sure those are pretty heavy old tables. He turns over the tables. He whips them. He says, you robbers of the people. Again, that's, again, clear that there was usury going on here. And there was usury, money changers, and going on here. So Jews were even practicing these crimes against fellow Jews because they were totally, totally corrupt. The reason why they crucified Jesus Christ, because they wanted to continue their wicked ways. They didn't want the beautiful messages of love and kindness and true devotion to the principles of God and the principles of the Golden Rule. And that's why they crucified him. And he was also, I think, trying to change the Jews, not simply for their benefit, but for the benefit of all humanity, because he saw where this was going. He had to be familiar with the allegations of the Torah, which may be true, may not be true. But maybe the stories about the mass murders were stories as rough as they could be to put fear into their enemies, you see, and to tell Jews, this is what you're supposed to be. Remember, Netanyahu evoked the story of the Amaleks killing every man, and every Jew in Israel knows you kill every man, woman, and baby and child, even suckling babies. Again, totally against any spirit of anything Christ said, right? Yet this is what he did. And so this is the kind of God that Jews wanted in terms of creating a religion of racial supremacy, racial hatred, and racial even genocide. And they've committed a lot of genocides ever since, including the genocides of the First and Second World Wars, the genocides of the Iraq War, the genocides of what's going on in Ukraine, the genocides of communism, and the genocide against those Palestinian men, women, and children in massive numbers. So that's the end of that story. Thank you so much for...
Well, I've been a fan of you for many, many years, and I hope one day, somehow, some way, I get to shake your hand. And if I make it to heaven, I wish to shake Hitler's hand because he was an incredible man. I've stood up for the Europeans far more than I do my own race, to be honest, because they've been done so horribly dirty. And they are a wonderful race of people. Truly respect what they've done for mankind.
The whole Second World War and whole experience of communism shows that the reality that Jews teach us in the world, and they've been doing this for the last 150 years, it's not just recently, the lies about Gaza and so forth, the lies about Ukraine. It's been going on a long, long time. And
yes, I've dedicated much of my life to, I'm 37, but I've spent many, many years researching and deep diving.
I'm glad that you have. I've been doing this since I was 14, so.
That's great. I've read most of your book, My Awakening.
Great.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I wish you the best of God's blessings and the best success in your life.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
It might have been a little bit longer, Dave, but it was hopefully a little bit enlightening.
Did I interrupt you once?
No, you were really kind.
Yes. Well,
I'm getting a whole new impression of you after
that. Well, don't get carried away. All right. No, look, she was obviously a new caller, right? She was a little nervous, and, you know, she got to
A lot of these concepts, they take more than two or three sentences.
So right.
You got to dive into a little deeper.
I thought it was good. We didn't have any questions. Yeah. So, yeah, Jimmy said, whatever the call is,
if people think it's really good, they just kind of say, wow, what can I say? You know,
yeah.
There's nothing to ask a question about because it seems so obvious, the truth.
Well, Bushmaster wants to call in. So, okay. Bushmaster, come on and call in.
You're welcome to.
And, we'll get you in now. And yeah, Jimmy, I don't know if *67 does it or if sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I don't know. I don't know what determines that, unfortunately. So
when we get a chance, we should talk a little bit about the stuff coming out today by the, it was on Redacted, and about the former member of the House, a military committee, and he was talking about the suppression of the facts about 9/11, which is really, really interesting.
All right. Well, let's get to the question, then if we have time, we will, for sure.
Good.
Okay. William Jones, you know who that is, Dave?
Sure.
That's our buddy Richard from the UK.
Yeah.
He says, and this question ends in the word forever. Has Duke seen the new straight-to-TV film, The Order, featuring Nicholas Hoult as Robert J. Matthews, defeat Never Victory Forever.
I haven't seen that film. No, I guess I should sometime watch it to see what these Jews write and say, and then compete with it. I mean, I need to also put a refutation of the lies of black KKK Klansmen and how that's the exact opposite of the reality on the ground when I was in Colorado Springs, which is the movie supposed to be based on. It's all based on a plot by the KKK, my Klan supposedly, to kill a black civil rights worker. And yet it's totally made up. There was no kill black civil rights worker. There was no bomb. There was no nothing. There was no arrest ever. And in the very book by Stallworth, he shows that there wasn't any plot for me or the Klan to kill anybody, but there was a plot by the Jewish run, and that's a Jewish run party or program, the Progressive Labor Party, to kill yours truly, David Duke.
And yeah, so, I didn't see the order
and
either.
And by the way, and he made a whole point of this, being a police officer, as a black guy, and he wasn't really infiltrating the Klan, but his name was used. But he said they also stated, and he's a witness to this, he quotes them in his book called Black KKK Klansmen. He actually did infiltrate the Progressive Labor Party. And he says that they said not only would they kill David Duke, but they would kill any police officer or any media person that tried to intervene and stop them from, quote, cracking my skull.
Well, we know how unhinged these fuckers are. So, yeah, it's I need to see that movie, The Order, but it's tough for me to watch, you know, movies. Let me give Bushmaster, let me find the number, because he doesn't know how to click the button, the call-in number. All right, hold on, let me give it to him. All right, there you go, buddy. There's a number, and you got to put that pin in after you call that number, which I pinned to the top of the chat. So let's see if the soldier can do it. You know, I know these army guys, you know, they're, you know, a little different from us Navy guys.
Yeah, my dad was an army guy. Yeah. So I'm sure he was prejudiced against.
Yeah.
Probably even more prejudiced against the Marines.
You should have been a Navy guy, Dukester.
Yeah.
You should have been a Navy guy.
Well, I was training with the Special Forces for a while in basic ROTC, but enjoyed those experiences. And it's funny, my dad brought Eisenhower, as I told you before, he brought the order to Howard to go to Europe.
Right.
And that was at Fort Polk. Eisenhower was on maneuvers in Louisiana.
Damn.
Crazy, huh?
Too bad I hate Eisenhower.
Even though, again, that was a different time. That was long before I was born, obviously. And, you know, and we weren't living in Louisiana then, but he was sent down to bring the orders to Eisenhower.
Dave, let me ask you this before we get the call. There's something going on here. You and I talked about it last week, I think. 75th birthday celebration on April 5 in Fort Worth, Texas. For you, what's up?
3 months early, but that's what they wanted to call it.
Right. So you want
to? I guess 75 is a premium. Yeah, there's going to be a celebration, and we're going to do it. I don't want to give too many details about it, but I tell you what, they can contact you, and we can try to sort things out to figure out how to do this safely, because we don't want to compromise anything. This is a private gathering, but it's by invitation only. So we just have to be careful. We have to really, you know, I've never had any of my meetings doxed, and it's very important that we don't start now.
Right. Right. Of course. Okay. Well, there's already an image out about it, a poster.
Yeah.
So that's online. So we can put that here.
Okay. Sure.
In the chat. And let's see. Did it go in? Okay. Yeah, there it is. It went in. Okay. We do have questions. Jahan, the nice lady who called in, She said, I didn't get to close on the one point I meant to say as well, that every rabbit hole I've ever looked into leads back to the Jews. I truly believe they are the line of Cain. The perversions of the parents are surely to be found in the offspring.
Well, I don't know. I think there's certainly, I do believe there's a genetic role in even criminality. And the reason we know that scientifically, and it doesn't mean every criminal is going to have an offspring that's a criminal, but we do know that when children that are adopted from parents who are, like if you have one parent that is convicted violent criminal, the chance of that adopted child, now the adopted child of a criminal parent goes to the same adoption pool as an adopted child of a non-criminal parent.
Right.
But when they do research and when they don't even tell the family, even the background where there's criminalness, so people don't even know that. They just know it's an adopted child. They know it's, you know, eye color, weight color, hair color, you know, whatever. That, interestingly enough, that children who turn out to have a genetic parent that is convicted of a violent crime, they're twice as likely, just in the general adoption pool, to become criminals themselves by the time that they're 25 years of age. Now, when they have two criminal parents who are committing violent crimes, like some crazy woman and some crazy guy, then they have almost a 200-300% greater chance of being criminal.
Wow.
So those
are that's incredible. We got our caller. Yeah. All right. Is this Bushmaster?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Ken, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, Dave, I need to stop my. I'm getting a feedback here. Let me
turn down your volume. Big time.
Or turn okay. off. Is the show on? Do you got the show on at the same time?
Probably. He needs to turn down his volume because that's what gets you the feedback.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes,
we heard you before.
Feedback? You sound better.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, we...
It's still loud.
Dr. D was talking about...
too loud.
Is it too loud?
Turn down your mic.
Too loud, I'm sorry. Okay. I just got earbuds on, so...
Turn down the volume so you can barely hear it, but you can hear it, okay? And that's going to keep the feedback
okay.
Because the feedback's coming
is
back.
Is that better?
No, you keep...
not much. You got to turn down the volume so you can almost barely hear it. Then you're not going to get a feedback, okay?
Okay, let me walk outside.
Now it's better. Better
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yes, better.
All right. I've got an old basset hound. She's getting real ornery. She's about 14, and... She doesn't take crap from nobody.
Is she anymore. Jewish?
No, she's definitely not Jewish. Well, she might be because she jumped on a German Shepherd the other day. So she might be. I might need to get rid of this dog. We've had her for 4 years. But she jumped on a German Shepherd. So
German Shepherds must perish. Did she write a book, German Shepherds Must Perish? The total plan for the eradication of all German.
No, all German. No, I don't think she's the author of that book.
Yeah, sell the dog and the money from the money from the dog, buy a real phone.
Okay. Oh, geez, guys, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Bad, man.
Last time I called in, it was perfect.
Your volume control on your.
Let me call back in because
right,
maybe it's
up,
bad. It's bad. Let me call back in.
Okay.
That's really aggravating.
I don't want you guys doing anything bad to my little basset hound.
No, don't worry. All right.
Let me call back in.
All right. So he's going to call back. I got another question here from Shahan. She says, I did have a question. And this question ends in the word thoughts. I did have a question about the founding fathers. I've seen the Masons and Jews give praise to George Washington and that he was a Mason. I've seen statues of Washington with Masonic symbolism. David, was he really a Mason? History is turned upside down, however. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, it's like so many other things. I think there were bad Masons. I think there were decent Masons. There were certain types of Masonry that had Jews in it. But I studied Masonry because I knew that some of the rich Masons were using their ability, and a lot of the Jews, as a way to overcome the aristocracy. However, a lot of just normal working people, for instance, let's say that there was a working man who did masonry, mason, bricklayers or fence makers or painters or mechanics, whatever. And they created their own business, and they were ambitious and they wanted to start their own business, and they wanted to have fair prices and so forth and compete fairly. And some aristocrats had a similar business. Well, the way it was in England at this time, for instance, Great Britain, where my ancestors came from, the way it was in those times is that the aristocrats had all the vigorish. I mean, they had all the grease in the wheels. See, the aristocrats were condoned and anointed by the king, and the king got his share, and they got their share, and the courts were almost run by all aristocrats. So if there was a situation where a Mason or just a simple working man who has a small business, if they were being cheated or they weren't paying their bills and they were going against the aristocrats just automatically would favor their fellow aristocrats.
Dave, we got another call. We got two calls.
The reason why the Masons erupted was that, and the eruption, if you actually read the Masonic principles, the Masons, the Christian aspects of the Masons, they said they were Christian. They promoted the idea of God. They promoted the idea of the things that we talk about in terms of Christian theology and values, treating people fairly, giving charity to the poor, all that kind of stuff. There was nothing.
Was Washington a Mason?
I think he was.
Okay, let's get to the call.
But the Masonry of kind of a commercial class in America, which were not Jews. They were not what you call some of the Masons of some of the places in Paris and France that were using that as a revolutionary.
Okay, cool. We'll come back to that if we can. Caller, what's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, am I on right now?
Yes.
Oh, hi. How are you, Dave? It's Leslie Borey calling from Brantford, Ontario, Canada.
Holy mackerel. Let me tell Dave who you are, Les. Dave, this is Les Borey, the Canadian political prisoner who was locked up from February of 2023 until January of 2025 for making a video. Remember we talked about Les?
Well, I'm honored to meet a former political prisoner, and I've been a former political prisoner myself.
Oh, hi, Mr. Duke. It's nice to talk to you.
I've been a political prisoner a number of times in a number of countries.
Oh, jeez.
Most of the times in other countries were short stints, but I was in prison 15 months after I dared to oppose the Iraq war. And in fact, that was part of the subject I was going to talk about today a little bit, if you don't mind me mentioning this. It's kind of interesting because today is an important day on this whole issue.
Yeah, let's get to the calls first.
Let me do this first for a second, okay?
Les is calling.
Well, I'm not going to be long, man. Just give me a minute. I'll be over.
All right, 1 minute. That's it.
All right. So the guy that prosecuted me was Mr. Chertoff. He was head of Homeland Security, but that time he was head of the Criminal Justice Division of the Justice Department, right? And his name was Chertoff, which means son of the devil. He was a Jew, a Jewish Zionist. And believe it or not, this guy who became head of Homeland Security was actually the U.S. attorney who actually was the attorney in Newark, New Jersey, where the first attack on the Trade Center took place in the 1990s. The truck bombs and so forth that were driven into the center. And this was even talked about in the show I talked about today. And then later, he became the lawyer for a guy accused. In fact, there's lots of evidence that he was also supporting the 2001, the 9/11 attacks. This is Chertoff. The guy became head of Homeland Security because of the 9/11 attacks. He was the lawyer for the guy, the Muslim radical. So he was all set up to do all this stuff. So yeah, there's no question in my mind that, yeah, and there's a lot of evidence for this, that they didn't want me to, they wanted to quiet me down. I was sent to prison just a couple weeks, 3 or 4 weeks before the Iraq war started. They didn't want me going on media all over the world about this subject, for sure. So I went to jail for 15 months for overpaying my taxes, by the way. That's what.
Oh, that'll teach you. So bad.
I said that. That's funny because it's exactly. I said that to my fellow prisoners. They said, "What's so funny?" I got the results of the audit because they said they're going to find out how much I owed the government, what I really owed the government. And they came back and they sent me a letter after, you know, 10 months in prison. I still had to stay the rest of the sentence. They're not going to forgive me. But anyway, and then they said, "We finished the audit. And we've discovered that you've overpaid your taxes by $6,000. And they said, "Well, why are you laughing about this?" I said, "Anybody would overpay their taxes to this criminal government that's using our money to ensure our destruction should be in jail."
Well said.
They all got a kick out of that. They were all gathered around. So go ahead. What's on your mind?
Not too much. I thought I'd just call in and say hello. Up here in Canada, they just called the election. So I was just going to go out tomorrow morning and prepare to qualify for this election if I can do it. You never know. I mean, I need 100 signatures. And
what are you going to run for?
Pardon me, Mr. Duke?
What are you going to run
for? I'm going to run for Member of Parliament as an independent candidate right now in the riding of Brantford Brant.
Well, good luck on that. I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you very much.
I do. Just run as a human rights candidate, but just make sure you use the nuances and say that everybody's got a right to preserve their own heritage, their own values, their own identity, and freedom of speech and all these thoughts, and nobody can argue with you.
Well, hate speech replaces violence as a form of expression. That's my opinion.
Well, I just have to be careful. I will never give them the right to call what we say is hate speech. That is a slander.
What oh, we absolutely, say it's true.
Is love speech. They are the hate yes. speechers. And as you know, and I know, the people who dominate our government, dominate our media, you got Facebook, you got Google, you got YouTube, all that in Canada, you got Alphabet, Sergey Brin and Larry Page. These are all Jewish Zionist supremacists who are in partnership with the Israeli government and the genocide going on in Gaza and going on in Ukraine. Both of these genocides are being conducted by Jews who control the U.S. government and a lot of the globalists in the world. That's the reality. They are the hate teachers. They are the warmongers. They are the most evil entity on planet Earth.
Please forgive me for not commenting on what you just said. I'm on probation for another almost year. So
you're very welcome. You shouldn't comment.
People
are so terrible that the fact that they even I remember a good friend of mine was running for the National Front in France for the European Parliament. His name was Bruno Gollnisch. Professor, by the way, Lyon University. And interestingly enough, he was charged with hate speech for saying, they asked him, "Well, how many Jews were killed in the Second World War?" He said, "I don't know the actual number." You know, that number is argued by different parties. So I can't say that I know for sure what the number is. For doing that, they convicted him of being a Holocaust denier.
Yeah, we've got a new law in here. It was introduced by the conservatives of all people, and it didn't pass. But then the text of the law was put into the former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's budget bill in 2022, and it's 2 years in jail for basically not agreeing with every single word and nuance that we're told that we have to believe. And that's what it is in Canada right now, unfortunately.
Well, the new definition of anti-Semitism is, and that's literally what this whole Jewish committee, worldwide committee, has argued, is that simply objecting to the mass murder of tens of thousands, about hundreds of thousands of Gazan men, women, and kids. And the destruction, 90% of the homes out of, you know, and over 2 million residents who are now down to 1.7 probably because so many are dead. But
holy smokes, mad.
Yeah, this is a good example of the dystopian universe we live in and the dystopian reality, because we're not allowed to deviate. So anti-Semitism is a new definition, and the definition is simply this today. Anti-Semitism is anybody who dares to oppose the Jewish genocide going on in Gaza against Palestinian men, women, and children. That's the anti-Semite of the world.
Wow, that's a new one for me, Mr. Duke. I haven't heard that one yet, sir.
That was a good
amazing
one.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's I don't want to comment. I was almost going to add to that, but yeah, I'm surprised, and I shouldn't be surprised, but I am.
Right. That is the one fact of life that Dave Gahari and I address every single day of our lives. And I probably have to admit, if I added up all the times that I talked about this issue or just used the three-letter word or four-letter word, you can use it with ending in a W or ending in an S, I'm mentioning this. If you just took all the times I used those words and discussed this problem, it would be like probably average one a minute, you know, in my waking hours because of how often it comes up. I mean, it's kind of amazing because it is the one question. It is the axis of power. And without this axis, half of the issues of the world dealing with the well-being of mankind, I think would have long ago been solved and mitigated.
Yeah, it's good to hear you talk about treating other people the way that you'd like to be treated, Mr. Duke. It was fantastic to hear you say that. That's going to send the movement ahead. I mean, if I can quote you on that, and in the future, I mean, that would help a lot of people out, I think, with when it comes to accepting what we're trying to tell them. If a man like with the reputation of Mr. David Duke says something like that, basically it's like something that Jesus would have said out of the Bible. You know what I mean? So that's quite a fine thing you said.
Right. And if you really apply this properly, it's a defense of everything we talk about. Because the reality is that human rights must belong to all people, all nations, all races, all heritages. We all have a right to preserve and protect and defend our own identity, traditions, heritage, ancestors, and the right to be treated fairly and justly, and that our existence is not wiped away. Now, when you talk about destroying a people, there's a reason why it's called genocide. It's a genocide. It's the destruction of a particular set of genes that make up a particular race or ethnic group of people. That's exactly what Judaism is, by the way. And I said that. You don't have to say that, but it's really true. And that's a reality. And it's amazing that we have so many Jews and others who can criticize Christianity, but Christianity and Christ say peace on earth, goodwill toward men, you know, to love everybody, to be kind to everybody, and, you know, to give everybody a chance to be fair to everyone. Now, I know a lot of people, and I was like this as a young man. I wanted just to speak up for white people. I still do every day. I just did, right? But I understand that the way that we put this in context, the way that we express this will create two things. You could be saying the same idea, but one way would produce opposition, hate against you, accusations that you're a racist bastard, or you say it another way and you're saying the same thing, but you're using the lexicon of the times and nobody can object to it. For instance, if you got some boys or girls and you're teaching them about the fact that Europeans are being basically replaced in our own countries. There's an effort to reduce our population, to replace us, which there is, to make us a minority in our own land, right? And to eventually dissolve our people, destroy our people. If you say anything about that, you know, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So how do you phrase this? How do you teach your children to talk about this to their friends? And when they're with their friends, with even their friends' parents. So if that child says, well, you know, I'm fighting for the white people, right? No, here's what you say. I'm fighting for all people, including my own and everybody. I believe that everyone has the right to equal rights, to being judged on the merit of their ability, to maintain their identity, their traditions, their values. This is true for Palestinians, which are being abrogated today by these Jewish racists. This is being true. It's certainly true for the Turks. 90% of people in Turkey want to preserve Turkish traditions, heritage, language, and everything. This is true about Greeks. This is true about Chinese. This is true about Africans. This is true about, you know, Amerindians, whatever you want to call them, or just Native Americans there, the Mayan descendants, or the other descendants of the great empires in Peru and other countries. It's people have this natural love and the willingness to survive. In fact, the law of self-preservation is a law on existence for every living creature, every breed that's ever been created. There are certain aspects, in fact, the characteristics that we've evolved to in certain breeds, like our particular talents, abilities, and mechanisms even of gaining food, or the habits we have of learning how to gain food, eat certain foods, or camouflage themselves to protect themselves, you know, from predators and so forth. All these things are designed for the preservation of that particular species or subspecies, which is called a race. And subspecies are the pathway to ethnic or racial evolution. You know, Darwin said it really clearly in his great book that was dealing with the question of natural selection. Are the favored races, right, in surviving and having their traits from a natural selection? And the selection was based on their adaptation to certain environments. And that's all. It's all true. So race is a creation of actually environmental separation over time. And then that particular reproducing breed of life adapted certain mutations that would happen naturally. But those mutations that serve their survival, their well-being, their happiness, so to speak, they're prospering in a real sense of survival, and limiting those traits that they might be born with, which would limit their probability of survival. So this is inbred in every creature, and it's certainly inbred in certain aspects of mankind. I'll just give you a couple examples. I'll give you one example, then we'll go to the next question so it doesn't get too long. Let's just put it this way. There are certain people in the world, there's certain people in Asia, for instance, certain Chinese, that really can't digest milk very well. They have a problem with lactose because they weren't much herders. But then you have, like, for instance, the Mongolian sheep herders and goat herders, right, and cattle herders that survived a lot because of their ability to adapt to drinking milk. Interesting, right? So how'd that happen? Well, if those people could have their herds, whether it be goats or whoever, and they could get milk from the goats or milk from the cattle or milk from the whatever, sheep or whatever, if they could get milk and consume it, it was a very easy thing to do, and they'd have very protein nutrients and nutrition, they had a much better chance to survive. So those people with those genes then were favored to survive. In human beings, certain kinds of intelligence too, and certain kinds of adoption, certain kinds of communication, like certain times of certain language development and certain kinds of mental reaction to communicate well, could, you know, increase your chance of survival. For instance, if you were raided by another tribe and you had one people who really communicated well and precisely and could say, okay, they're coming around from 50 meters to the left and we're going to go around from 50 meters to the right, and, you know, and make this clear communication to them, you'd have a lot more chance of surviving against that enemy tribe that weren't quite as articulate, right? Correct? So there's all sorts of things which also have a genetic variation and a genetic aspect to it that enable people to survive. And that's why people around the world, the reason why people in Europe have light skin is because we come from cloudy climes, you know, things, people in the mountains are cloudy areas where you don't see the sun almost all winter. And we need all the vitamin D we can get to survive because human beings have to make their own vitamin D. So we have light skin. It lets the skin penetrate into under the skin and create these vitamin D molecules. So vitamin D3, actually. So these are just different aspects of that. And in terms of mating, we had certain traits. Why do a lot of Europeans have blue eyes or light brown eyes or chestnut eyes or green eyes or, you know, dark eye, whatever. But, you know, certainly some women and men with light eyes, that was seen as a very different, you know, kind of a rare trait. And that was favored and that helped people get more of people like that. Now, me, I've got green eyes. I got, my father's got very beautiful brown, light brown eyes. And he was fantastic eyes. And my grandmother had blue eyes. And, you know, so it's just like different traits just kind of have different associative aspects of that. It's just the reality of life. But the thing is, if Europeans like the look of blue eyes or like the look of brown eyes, you know, they can easily get blue eyes or brown eyes just by figuring out who they marry, right? It's like, it's simple. Now, somebody can say that's not important. It may not be important. But if it's important to you or if it's important, or any aspect of this is important, people have the right to choose and to do that, correct? So,
no, absolutely.
There's a lot of people who are tall and want to be tall, right? And they want their kids to be tall. There are people who are really smart and they want to marry a smart person, man or woman, because they want their kid to be smart. And smart people tend to have smart kids. And unfortunately, people that are a little less smart don't seem to have children that are smart. Now, the idea of that is not saying that dumb people are terrible or bad or should be bred out or anything like that. No, but what it's saying is that all these factors are just realities of life. And in a way, when we have a mating pattern that helps, let's say, in fact, I do think that people of greater intelligence seem to have more attractiveness. If you have some guy who's not only strong and healthy, but he's really intelligent, and he can figure out a good joke, or he knows how to make a beautiful poem, or he knows how to compose a magnificent song, or do fantastic music. He's got a heads up, right, in winning the hand of that woman that he loves. So there's all sorts of different traits for different people, and the breeding of human beings is just as important as when we talk about the breeding of a thoroughbred horse, whether they're going to win the Kentucky Derby or not. It's just as important, probably in different ways.
Les, you there, buddy?
I am, Dave.
Yeah. So let me say,
I didn't go into this philosophical rant for a while, but
well, I'm glad Les called in. Les and I are going to be doing a show on FTJ this Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time.
That sounds great. Well, we're out of time now, aren't we? So
I come on, Dave, tomorrow morning. We got a bunch of questions.
10 o'clock, actually.
You know, we got a bunch of questions. We're going to We're going to have to answer.
Well, we got to go because I got
No, come on, man. We got a bunch of questions.
Short time because I have to.
All right.
I got to go out of town tomorrow and get my car fixed.
All right. Well, just a little bit, Dave, right? Just
a little bit. 10 minutes max.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
I'm setting it at 15 and that's it. All
come
right.
on, Dave.
That's hard.
Okay, but listen. If you answer the questions quickly.
No, I'll choose what to do. But
no, I'm saying I'm going to give you the question.
Oh, I'm going to go after 15 minutes. However,
oh, damn.
I am.
Come on, man.
Sorry, sorry to be so intransigent. But I'm right. just
intransigent. Les, thanks for calling, Les. A lot
you're
of
welcome, Dave. You guys
have it that way, Dave. You just don't get me half the time because I want to talk like a gent.
That's true. Les, a lot of people were excited. If you could see the chat, I don't know if you can. A lot of people were excited that you called in.
Yeah, good luck.
Well, it's real nice of them. I'd like to say hi to everyone out there, and thank you for all the support. And we'll see what we can do up here in Canada and make some change. We're your northern neighbor. We got your back door. Well, we don't have your back door yet, but if I'm prime minister someday, we'll have your back door. Don't you worry about that.
I'd love that. Right. Bill Christie, who is you know, my good friend Ernst Sandell's lawyer, and his trials and everything. I knew Ingrid Rimland well. I'm sorry we lost those two wonderful people. I knew a lot of people over the years in the nationalist cause in Canada. I did all sorts of shows in Canada before I was banned. And in fact, every show I did, I had huge support from the Canadian audience. So,
well, thanks to you.
Well, thank you, Les. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, you will. I'll try to get a picture to you soon, too. All right, guys, have a very good night, and good night to everyone else out there. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Les. All right.
Bye.
Buddy. Bye. Awesome. Les Borey. All right, Dave, here's the questions. Ready?
Go ahead.
All right. Here we go. Just give a minute on it. We'll go through all of them. How come Duke... And this is from Richard. How come Duke gives Freemasonry a pass when its origins seem Jewish, not Christian?
Okay. Well, I disagree with that. I think there were Jews who wanted to use Freemasonry because Jews also, they did interbreed with the aristocracy, unfortunately, which helped them in Great Britain. But, you know, they also, because... they were considered the denizens. They set up their own businesses, their own culture, their money lending, and all the rest of it. That they also had to go against the aristocracy. So they had a reason to also get involved in Masonry and use it as a weapon against the aristocracy. So, you know, I'm not saying, let me tell you, I'm not defending Masonry. I don't give it a free pass, but I am telling you this. That the average Mason in the United States is like a common as a laborer or a construction worker, right? And what do they do? They're Shriners that go and have a fundraiser for poor kids or kids suffering from whatever cancer or homeless and all that other things. And they're just normal people, and most of them are probably voting right wing now. Is there a difference between them and some of the Rothschilds who might be part of these secret orders? You know, that's a whole different subject. I'm not giving them a free pass. But I do know that there was a problem in Great Britain with aristocrats hindering really free competition and people to do businesses on their own. Because, by the way, I have a lot of aristocrats in my ancestry. I had 24 Sherwooders who were Magna Carta, who were my direct ancestors, believe it or not. That's pretty amazing. I've never met anybody with that many ancestors from the Magna Carta. But the interesting thing is, I don't put any stock in that. Aristocracy, what we have to do in terms of business and fairness and in the courts is not judge somebody by his aristocratic status, how much money he has, or position in society, but of true fairness, of true justice system. Based on merit and truth. And that's one of the reasons why Masonry arose. So I'm not defending Masonry. I'm just talking about the historic realities of why Masonry became popular, even among working people. But in America, I mean, really, if anybody goes to a Masonic meeting, and in politics, sometimes people invite you to certain things. And I went to every kind of meeting of anybody who would invite me. These, every Masonic meeting I went to, they were all plumbers, bricklayers, painters, right? You know, car mechanics. That's who dominated these Masons weren't a bunch of rich Jewish, you know, moneylenders. So I'm just saying to you, that's the reality of Masonry in America. So is that really the people that we got to worry about? And the people we do have to worry about in Jews are, you know, are those people, the hedge fund operators, the big money operators, the AIPAC contributors, the people who control American politics, the people who have this oligarchy and infiltrated our government, who control the Ivy League and discriminate against better qualified students by joining together.
All right, Dave, we got to move. Okay, because we only got 15 minutes.
Go for it.
Lori gave you a $5 donation. She says, thanks, Dr. Duke.
Thanks, Lori.
Okay. And let's get moving here. We got, I saw another donation here. That was from Bushmaster, gave you a donation, Dave, of $20.
Wow, that's very generous, Bushmaster.
That was the fellow who had the phone trouble. Hopefully he'll call next week.
Thanks, Bushmaster.
Yes. Okay, next. All right.
Are you from the outback of Australia, Bushmaster?
He's an American.
I know.
An American veteran.
I'm just making a joke.
Okay, Davis is in the house, and his show is coming on 7 to 10 Central Time. So it's on now. So after we leave here,
we're intruding on the show. We'll
check out Davis.
In 9 minutes, folks.
Yes, right. All right. I saw a question here. All right. Let's see. And this is from William Jones, from Richard. What's Dukester's thoughts regarding the FBI making the Kennedy assassination files public? For the first time, in his view, was Aristotle Onassis Jewish and involved with the mob or not?
Was Aristotle Onassis Jewish? I don't know. I have a lot of other questions that I'd like to know and I'd like to expose. And I'm not concerned about whether one guy, Aristotle Onassis, is Jewish or not. I'm concerned about whether or not people making our decisions for government, people around Trump, whether they're Jews or not. Like Ludnick. Is that his name?
Lutnick.
Economic boss?
Lutnick.
Lutnick. There you go.
Yes.
Lutnick.
Howard Lutnick. He was the guy who, he got the Jew call on 9/11. He had to take his son to kindergarten.
He did. He said he got the Jew call?
He didn't say it, but he did. So.
How do you know?
Well, my former brother-in-law worked at Cantor Fitzgerald. And he didn't make it out of there. That whole floor died, 106th floor.
But the boss did. You made it out.
Boss never went to work that day.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. Okay.
There's a man on my street who was in New York on business, and there's a memorial to him three houses down from my house.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
And his son actually did a commercial for me when I ran for Senate.
Oh, cool.
His father would be still alive if David Duke could have been listened to in that first Senate race in 1990, because we wouldn't have had 9/11.
Right. Remember when we were on SFR and there was one of the people who participated in the show, the militia guy, Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a question or comment here.
Sure.
Dr. Duke, by the way, it ends in the word it. Dr. Duke misquotes scripture. He is using what the Jew gave us decades ago. It's not peace on earth, goodwill to men. Properly translated, sacred scripture said peace on earth to men of goodwill. Since the Jew is not goodwilled, he deserves no peace and will not get it.
Well, I'm sorry, I stand corrected, but I wasn't trying to quote scripture on peace on earth and goodwill toward men. I was trying to talk about the basic fundamental message of love in the New Testament. I wasn't trying to give the exact quote. But he's right, so I stand corrected.
Okay. Well, there you go, Nick. All right. Next. And we're getting close, right? Okay. Yeah. All right.
I got my clock on the.
Oh, boy. You're tough. You're tough.
Yeah. I've learned it from you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Dave. Okay. Remember that nice lady who called in? Jahan?
Yeah.
She says, I find, and this question or comment ends in, ends with the, LOL. I find it hypocritical that non-Europeans tout the anti-white hatred as they're sitting in European countries and enjoying a modern European way of life. This coming from a Middle Eastern woman, albeit I have blonde and red-haired, blue-eyed, light-skinned relatives on both sides. Point still stands. LOL.
Yeah, when I was in Syria, and I was in Lebanon, and when I was in Israel and meeting with Palestinians, and I was in these different societies, even Libya, I met a lot of people, indigenous people in that country, those countries, with light eyes, light hair, and very light skin. So there has always been that, and they tend to associate more in the kind of the more educated classes and the more successful in business and life. But, you know, that I've noticed that all through the Middle East, and I've been to most of the countries there.
Yeah,
and Iran too. You'd be surprised how many, you know, very, very people that be in the streets of Iran or in the university who would just look like a typical neighbor you'd find right down the street.
Right. I think what she was saying was that, you know, these people have parked their asses in white civilizations, and they're ripping apart white civilizations from white civilizations. And that's something that's really annoying.
Well, I tell you what, the people doing that, you know, again, it's like the old thing when Jesus said about, he said, these people, we talk about the specks in our eyes, right? And they got beams of wood in their eyes, right? And I think, you know, there's certainly a big difference in races, especially in the more extreme aspects of that. But at the same time, you know, it's like the real problem, the biggest problem we have in terms of races is the takeover of our elites, which is a Jewish takeover, as David Brooks, the New York Times, says, quote, the Jewish takeover of America. They've taken over the American elite because they are the ones that are affecting our brains, our minds, our belief systems, who are corrupting us and bringing us into all sorts of degeneracies and destructive behaviors. That's the truth.
Yep.
And we can concentrate on these other people all we want, but these things, including the immigration policies that have allowed this to happen, even fostered it to happen, and the lack of enforcement of these laws is something that we got to address first and foremost, because that's who's caused this problem. If we had good people, if we didn't have Jews taking over our elite of America, we would never have the immigration problem that we've had. That's the ultimate truth, and that's the most important truth that I know.
Yep. Dave, can you do a show this Friday from our time, noon to 1?
Central time?
Yeah.
Probably can.
Can or can't?
Can.
Can. Okay, cool. I'll get you the contact info.
Who is it for?
It's Kevin Barrett. Great guy. He was the professor who was shit canned from the university because he questioned 9/11.
Right.
Yeah. So he says, over the years, he's become one of my heroes. So next Friday, the 28th, or this Friday, the 28th.
He said, you've become one of his heroes? Or
he's you.
Oh, well, that's very kind.
Yes, he's watching us right now. So
thank you, Mark. That's very kind.
Yes. You got a lot of people who, you know, feel that way, Dave. Dave,
I'm very, very, very thankful for
you. Yeah, yeah. Listen, we got just, I don't know if this is a question. It ends in the word quote. It's from Psychodrilla. They have told whites in the UK that they are no longer Christians. The Bible warns us that when we turn from God, we will be devoured by demonic hordes. And that is exactly what is happening. I'm not black-pilled. I'd just like to hear Dr. Duke's take on the situation. Plus, I may be wrong about the Bible quote.
Okay, this is the longest, the last question and last answer, and I'll take 1 minute or 2 minutes, but that's it. So give me the last part of that question.
Okay, they have told whites in the UK that they are no longer Christians. The Bible warns us that when we turn from God, we will be devoured by demonic hordes. And that is exactly what is happening. I'm not black-pilled. I'd just like to hear Dr. Duke's take on the situation. Plus, I may be wrong about the Bible quote.
Well, here's what I know. And again, I'm somebody who's actually read the Old Testament. Everybody talks about reading the Old Testament, what it says in the Old Testament, what it says in the New Testament. I've read it twice thoroughly and with a very open mind and a very inquiring mind. If I saw something that seemed strange, I did a lot of research in it. And here's the situation. Even the Old Testament itself has sections. A perfect example is Jeremiah. And you can do one of these Bible search-ups like the Living Bible. Or there's all sorts of things that you can actually do. And you can type subjects in and you can find the verses that are about this. And it says in there, it says in Jeremiah, it says, really beware when you read the scriptures, because the scribe, many of the scribes are liars. That certain scribes, certain Pharisees, certain adjudicators, powerful people will lie to you. Certain prophets will lie to you. You've got to always read things with a very wide open eyes. You've got to look and see what's said. You got to compare it with your other knowledge. And that makes sense to me. Even the Old Testament scriptures themselves say this. And I just had my nightlight turn on. As you can see, I've changed colors. I used to be very white, and now I'm kind of a rosy-cheeked young guy of 16.
You still look great.
Well, Dave. Well, I'm a rosy-cheeked guy of 16 now.
You're not going to believe it, Dave. We got a call.
From whom?
I don't know. Just a fan, I guess.
You want to hear?
I don't know. You want me to answer it?
Okay, real quick. That's it.
All right, caller. Shoot.
Yo, what up?
Hey, it's Henry from Estonia.
Oh, good old Henry. We love you, Henry. And you're definitely a patriot for your country. I loved Estonia when I was there. I've got good memories in that place. And it's a beautiful people and a beautiful country. I just hope that you can help get the country straightened out to realize who your true enemies are. And we know who that is. It's not these, today anyway. It was certainly the Bolsheviks when the Bolsheviks controlled the country. But it's time now to have peace. And I hope that that's what comes to Estonia.
Yeah. My question is, what would you answer to an immigrant, maybe from the Middle East, where we went to war and they say that they're here because we went to war in the Middle East, and so they had nothing else to do but to just escape war to Europe? What would you say?
Okay. I would say that every individual has the right to make certain decisions, to go certain places. It doesn't mean that there's a lot of countries I can't go to because I'm banned by the Jews that control the country, right? Even though I'm trying to defend the country. But everyone can try to go somewhere, and it's hard to blame a migrant to this country who's been dispossessed, say, in Israel by Jews. driven out of his country, trying to escape this Jewish murder. And then he goes to Britain or he goes to France. And if they get let into those countries, you can't blame anybody for trying to have a better life, feed their family, and then make for a future than to do that. That doesn't mean that those countries should accept those in unlimited numbers, because obviously those countries have the same right to resist, the same way the Palestinians truly had the right to resist the Jewish migration. And that's one of the things that I do quite a bit. I always kind of point this out, that if someone's a Palestinian and says, okay, you know, if you want to take us in, fine, but I don't have the intrinsic right to come to your country. And he says, just like the Jews had no intrinsic right to come to my country and take my jobs and my life and my existence. And this was facilitated by your country. So if I have an opportunity, they think they can do it. Now, the problem is that the numbers are so great that they threaten the country itself. Now, if you had a program, you had a temporary thing and really kept truth with it, where you'd offer people some opportunity to get education and they can earn their way through and they have the opportunity to go back to their own country in a free country, because our country is helping them win freedom for the country, as we should have done against the Zionists, then that's a whole different ball of wax. But we can't have unlimited immigration to European countries because Jews want it. Secondly, the Jewish enabling of this non-white change in the countries in the United States, Canada, and around the world facilitated Jewish tyranny over our country and control over our policy. Because this is how they affected the demographic, the voting, and they kept white people from acting in their own interest. If whites would have been in a situation where there were very few Jews and very few non-Europeans, we had certainly the great opportunity to continue and preserve our way of life. It's just a natural thing. The reason why the Palestinians are being oppressed today, the reason why that's happening, is because the racism that existed in the United States of America to allow Jews to come in and take over our elite, take over our banking system, take over our governmental apparatus, take over our military, taking over our government, taking over campaign finance, taking over banking. That's why they have their problem. And we, the people of America and Europe, have the same problem the Palestinians have. It's a different kind of a problem, but it's the same problem of replacement by people who are not of us. And we have a right to be free and to be us, and for our people to survive and to live in peace and freedom and attunement to the highest values of our own people and our own traditions and heritage. We are determined to make sure there's a future for our children and our own nations, not at the cost of other nations, but as a principle of human rights that I also say America must defend for all the nations, just like our own. That's it. Have a good day, everybody.
Hold on, Dave. Thanks, Henry. Dave, Burned Before Reading donated $5 to you. And that's it. I mean, there are tons more questions, but you got to go, right?
Yeah, I got to go. I got to do some things. I got to get on the road early in the morning, and it's supposed to be storms in the morning. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Tell everybody where they can catch you this week.
Well, I'm on MetsRadio.com at 10 o'clock Central Time. And we also have that on archive shortly after the show. And we're on all kinds of media on FDJmedia.com. So give them a rundown. Make a little logo or something and tell them all
they
the
just got to look at the homepage. Your mug is everywhere.
Let's keep it going then.
That's on with Nick, Flood, Zach, and you're going to be on with Barrett on Friday. And should I take a vote to see if people want you to leave?
No, you shouldn't. And listen, My mug is on the air, but please protect me from being mugged and kidnapped from the duties that I have right now in my life.
You're not going to be mugged and kidnapped.
Thank you.
All right. All right, thank Dave. You. All right, everyone. Sorry we didn't get to answer all the questions. But
thank y'all. Appreciate y'all. Y'all are great.
All right, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. It's been a great show.
Dave, I got to tell you something after the show, so just hang out, okay?
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
All right, let's do it.
See you guys next week.